Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Kelly Jean Kelly, Pete Musto, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Kelly Jean Kelly.
Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Those words were written by poet Emma Lazarus and placed on the United States Statue of Liberty. Since 1903, they have welcomed millions of immigrants as they entered New York Harbor. Now, a top U.S. official says, the words mean, give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own 2 feet and who will not become a public charge. Ken Cuccinelli is the acting director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. On Tuesday, he told NPR that the words from Lazarus were put on the Statue of Liberty at almost the same time as the first public charge law was passed. Cuccinelli's comment came a day after he announced a new rule to deny green cards to immigrants who become a public charge. He said the Immigration Act of 1882 has always required foreign nationals to rely on their own resources, with help from relatives and others. But the term public charge was never clearly defined. He added, that is what changes today with this rule. The Immigration Services now say a public charge is a person who receives public cash assistance or long-term care at government expense. Reporters later asked U.S. President Donald Trump about Cuccinelli's comments on NPR. Trump said, I don't think it's fair to have the American taxpayer paying for people to come into the United States. But Democrats and immigration supporters condemned Cuccinelli's comment. They said the policy would favor wealthy immigrants over those from poor countries in Latin America and Africa. Charles Wheeler is with the Catholic Legal Immigration Network. He said the new policy is really a backdoor way of prohibiting low-income people from immigrating. One Democratic presidential candidate, Beto O'Rourke, added, this administration finally admitted what we've known all along. They think the Statue of Liberty only applies to white people. Another Democratic presidential candidate, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, tweeted, our values are etched in stone on the Statue of Liberty. They will not be replaced. Despite the criticism, Cuccinelli said in an interview with CNN later on Tuesday night that Lazarus's words referred to people coming from Europe. He said Europe had class-based societies where people were considered wretched if they weren't in the right class. The U.S. government estimates the new public charge policy could affect the status of about 382,000 immigrants. Immigrant supporters say the real number could be much higher. It will especially go up if the rule is extended to the millions of people who apply for U.S. visas at American consulates around the world. Since January 2018, the U.S. State Department has already given diplomats the ability to deny visas on public charge grounds. The number of visas denied on those grounds has since increased 4 times compared to the previous year. Others are concerned the rule could negatively affect public health by discouraging immigrants from using health or food aid. The Trump administration estimates the new rule will save $2.47 billion a year in spending on public benefits. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
On a recent cold morning in Johannesburg, South Africa, Luyanda Lachweo dug deeply into a trash can. He pulled out items like empty drink containers and old cooking instruments. Then he found what he was looking for, used white paper. Lachweo, who is 35 years old, has spent 9 years searching through Johannesburg's trash cans and is a master of turning trash into treasure. He is one of the city's 9,000 so-called reclaimers. They are a loosely organized group of workers who collect and sell reusable materials or recyclables. At first, his job may look simple. His tools are his hands and a homemade plastic container on wheels. But he must keep track of which areas of the city put out trash on which days. He also must note which roads to avoid in the early morning darkness. There is always the risk of getting hit by a car. And he keeps a mental record of what a recyclable item can sell for in the ever-changing market. Lachweo was studying banking at a local university, but he ran out of money and had to leave school. Lachweo's job is important. Experts estimate that reclaimers collect and recycle up to 90% of South Africa's post-consumer packaging and paper. In doing so, they save local governments up to 750 million rand, or nearly $53 million, in waste storage space every year. Industry studies show that, as a result, South Africa has a recycling rate of just under 60%. That means it is recycling at the same rate as some European nations. Lachweo spoke with VOA this month as he made his rounds. An average reclaimer could collect about 200 kilograms of waste a day, he said. You multiply that by 9,000 reclaimers, takes it to about 2 million tons or something. That's in a day. That's redirecting a lot of material out of the landfills. Melanie Sampson is a researcher in human geography at the University of the Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. She has spent many years studying this complex, loosely organized system. Similar systems exist in many developing nations, she says, and its popularity is spreading. Sampson says reclaimers exist in almost every modern city worldwide. They are mainly in places where there is major inequality in people's earnings. You have people who are wealthy enough that they're buying things and throwing them away when they still have value or can be reused, she said. And you have people who are so poor that they are willing to go through other people's trash to make a living. I'm Pete Musto.
Apple says it will pay $1 million to any researcher who can successfully break into an iPhone. Other technology companies are also offering big payments for people to identify serious security threats in an effort to prevent major internet attacks. A company official recently announced the new reward at a yearly security conference in Las Vegas. The Black Hat Conference is attended by many security researchers who attempt to hack the computer systems of companies and governments. The researchers seek security weaknesses that need to be fixed to prevent outside attackers from breaking into systems and devices. Apple's $1 million offer is thought to be the largest reward promised by a major technology company to defend against internet attacks. The announcement came from Apple's head of security engineering and architecture, Ivan Krstic. The $1 million reward will be paid to any researcher who meets Apple's conditions for gaining full access to an iOS device without assistance from the owner, the website Apple Insider reported. Such a takeover of an iOS device has proven to be extremely difficult for hackers as well as law enforcement organizations. The reward is a new part of Apple's Feedback Assistant program. The program is a way for developers to send bug reports about programming problems and possible security threats. Apple began offering money rewards of up to $200,000 in 2016 to researchers for high-quality bug reports. During comments to the conference, Krstic said since that time, the company had received over 50 useful reports, PC Magazine reported. Other rewards include $500,000 for gaining high-value user data over a network without user involvement. A successful user data extraction could pay a researcher $250,000, while gaining basic access to a locked device could bring $100,000. In addition to the larger top rewards, Apple also introduced other changes to the program. One difference is that the reward will be offered to all security researchers who wish to take part. In the past, the researchers were selected and invited by Apple. In addition, rewards will now be paid to people identifying security issues with systems beyond iOS, related to the iPad, Apple Watch, and iCloud. Also at the Black Hat Conference, Microsoft announced its own new program designed for researchers to test security. The program is called Azure Security Lab. With its launch, Microsoft also announced increases in its top awards for bug reporting. The company says the Azure Security Lab will give researchers the chance to create possible hacking incidents that could be attempted by criminal attackers in the real world. Tests are to be carried out in a controlled, secure environment without the possibility of causing real harm, Microsoft says. Azure is Microsoft's cloud services operation. The lab will permit researchers to look for security weaknesses and attempt to launch attacks on the system. The company says the lab will also offer specific challenges to researchers that will pay top rewards up to $300,000. Microsoft said in a statement it had paid researchers a total of $4.4 million in rewards during the past year for identifying serious security issues. Last month, Google announced it had paid researchers more than $5 million since 2010 for finding and reporting security bugs that help keep our users safe. The company said its rewards program had resulted in more than 8,500 individual bug reports. In addition, Google announced large increases for the security reporting rewards it offers. The highest amount for basic reports received was tripled to $15,000, while payments for some high-quality reports doubled to $30,000. I'm Brian Lynn.
On today's National Parks Journey, we explore a unique landscape in the North Central United States.
The land is big and mostly flat. There are endless fields of corn, wheat, and soybeans. Colors of green and gold paint the earth for kilometers. But as we travel west, the farmland gives way to wild grasses. It grows tall here, under a huge blue sky. Farther on, however, the grass becomes much shorter. A strong, dry wind blows continuously from the west. Suddenly, the land is torn and rocky, dry and dusty. The green is gone. Now we are surrounded by light reds and browns. Purple and gold hues can be seen as well. All around are broken, disorganized forms. There are sharp walls of rocks and hills and valleys of all sizes and shapes. Welcome to Badlands National Park in the state of South Dakota.
Hundreds of thousands of years ago, this whole area was grassland. Then, forces of nature destroyed the grass in some parts. Water and ice cut into the surface of the earth, splitting open some of its oldest rocks. Nature beat at the rocks, wearing them away. The result is one of the strangest sights, a place of otherworldly beauty. Altogether, the Badlands cover more than 15,000 square kilometers. About 10% is part of the national park. The area is a study in extremes. Temperatures in the summer have been as high as 46 degrees Celsius. In the winter, they have dropped to as low as 41 degrees below zero. Life in the Badlands is difficult. Its name comes from the Lakota Native Americans. They called the area Mako Sika, or Land Bad, because of the extreme temperatures and harsh landscape.
The term Badlands has come to be used for areas where soft rock is eroded in a very dry climate. Looking at a rock wall in the Badlands is like looking back through time. The layers and colors in the Badlands' strange formations were formed over millions of years. The long history of the Badlands began some 65 million years ago, around the time the dinosaurs died out. A huge sea covered the middle of North America. It was drying up. The land at the bottom of the sea was black shale rock. That shale is now at the bottom of the Badlands. The next level of rock is from what geologists call the Oligocene epoch. That period began about 37 million years ago. At that time, the Badlands area was warm and wet. A jungle grew there. A large number of warm-blooded animals lived in the jungle. Some of these animals were buried in the mud left behind by floods. Over millions of years, their bodies turned to rock. These fossil remains are a record in stone of what ancient animals looked like. The Badlands holds the world's richest collection of fossils from the Oligocene epoch. The area contains fossils from rhinos, horses, and huge cats. Because of this evidence here, we know that the period was great for mammals. Their total population worldwide increased greatly, and they grew in body size to take over the land left by the dinosaurs. About 28 million years ago, the environment of North America became much drier and cooler. The jungle disappeared. The land in the center of the continent became a prairie. A prairie is a large open area of grassland. The prairie here is one of the world's largest.
The Badlands were created on the western edge of this great prairie. They started to take shape as rain, wind, snow, and ice beat down on the land. The rain and ice tore deep cuts in the soft earth. Over time, they became wider and deeper. The wind dried the earth and blew away the topsoil. Today, rain comes to the Badlands mostly in sudden, fierce storms. Often, the area's rivers are cooked dry by the hot sun and wind. Yet, when it rains, the rivers flood. Their waters cut even deeper into the soft earth. The Badlands are very dry, but they are not a desert. They are filled with many living things. There are short native grasses and wildflowers. The national park is home to many animals: bison, bighorn sheep, and prairie dogs live here. Prairie dogs are small animals that dig tunnels in the earth and live underground. Every living thing in the Badlands must be able to survive the extreme conditions. That includes the humans who have called the area home. Several hundred years ago, the Sioux tribe of Native Americans lived all around the Badlands. At the time, the Badlands were rich with animals. There were wolves and bears, bighorn sheep, and deer. The most important animal to the Sioux, however, was the bison. They look like huge, hairy, wild cattle. The Sioux way of life was completely organized around hunting bison. They used every part of the animal. They ate the meat. They made clothing and tents from its fur and skins. They used the bones as tools. They even boiled the feet to make a sticky substance to hold things together.
White settlers who came west also hunted bison. In fact, they hunted bison until very few remained. They also planted crops where the bison had once fed. In time, the Sioux way of life on the Great Plains came to an end. The settlers and the federal government did not respect Native American cultures. The government expected the Sioux Indians to learn to farm. But the Badlands' harsh environment was not good farmland. With few bison left to hunt, the Indians were sent to live on a reservation next to the Badlands area. The Badlands became a national monument in 1939. Congress declared it a national park in 1978. More than 1 million people visit Badlands National Park each year.
The park is now a protected area for bison. The National Park Service moved bison back into the Badlands. The animals are doing well. So are the bighorn sheep, foxes, coyotes, golden eagles, and prairie dogs. Most of the wild animals must be watched from a distance, especially the bison. The Park Service says a full-grown bison can weigh as much as a small car. It can run faster than a horse. And it can become angry and dangerous easily. Today, of course, the history of the Badlands continues to be written. As measured in geological time, the Badlands are being destroyed rapidly. The area, with its unusually soft rock, is being worn away at a rate of 1 centimeter per year. In a few more million years, the Badlands will be worn away forever.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.